All right, well, before we get to much of that, we actually are going to review some of where we've been and kind of focus really on one verse and then introduce or reintroduce some of the things that are there on the guide. But Revelation chapter 8 is really an important transition for us in all of the book of Revelation because it is a transition between the opening of the seals that we've already looked at from chapters 6 through 8. And of course, those are the seals that are attached to the heavenly scroll that we first learn about from the heavenly throne room vision of chapter 5. And so we have the seals in one hand, and now as we come to chapter 6, we have the sounding of the trumpets. And of course, that's just about to commence here after verse 6. And so we have a transition between the two. And just like we had a transition between the throne room vision and the seals, we talked a little bit about the different approaches of coming to those verses. Here we have another kind of pause in our study where we have the transition from the seals to the trumpets, and we want to see where everything kind of fits. So just to review the verses that we've already looked at, and again, this is there in chapter 8, starting verse 1. This is from the last two lessons that we've looked at. If you remember, John first tells us about the new seal that is opened by the Lamb of this scroll, which is, of course, the seventh seal. Verse 1, Revelation 8, "And when he, the Lamb, Jesus, had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour." And we spent a little time discussing what the significance of that silence must have been. And I think primarily it is a silence of anticipation, a silence of suspense of what is yet to come. And so we talk about the new seal. And then that leads us to verse 2, where John tells us about the new sight, and that is seven angels being given seven trumpets in heaven by God. Verse 2, "And I saw the seven angels which stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets." And I think from John's perspective, at this stage in Revelation, if obviously we know more than he knows at this point because we've already read chapters 8 and 9 and going forward. But as this is being revealed to him, this is where it ends for him until he's given more information. And so from his perspective, he's probably thinking in terms of the Olivet Discourse back in Matthew 24 and other passages where this is it. This is the sounding of the great trumpet, even the last trump of God that is going to, really hearken the Lord Jesus is coming from heaven, and he's looking forward to this in this vision. But instead of that, more revelation is given. And so that's what we're going to see moving forward in this chapter. But that's what he sees, seven angels with seven trumpets. But then, before those angels get to do anything with their trumpets, and we looked at this primarily last Sunday, John tells us about the new synopsis or the new summary, which gives us a vivid description of just what is about to happen when those seven angels finally get to sound their trumpets. And so again, we learn from verse 3 through 5, "And another angel came and stood at the altar, having a golden censer, and there was given unto him much incense, so that he should offer it with the prayers of all saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne. And the smoke of that incense, which came with the prayers of the saints, ascended up before God out of the angel's hand. And the angel then took the censer, filled it with the fire of the altar, and cast it into the earth. And then there were voices and thunderings and lightnings and an earthquake." And as I mentioned last time, I think this is sort of another one of those interludes. And this is really a good summary, a good synopsis of all of the trumpet judgments that we're going to learn about. Because the way they start here in verses 3 through 5 with, again, that storm theophany, that presence of God in the language of a storm, it starts there in verse 5 of voices, thunderings, lightnings, and earthquake. That's actually how it's going to end. And so really this is a picture of all of the things that are going to take place during the trumpet judgments. So I think you can look at verses 3 through 5 best as a summary of what is yet to come. And all of this is meant to prepare both John and us to the what we can describe as the new sound that we will come to here in verse 6. And we're told these words. Before we get into the actual trumpet judgments themselves, it says, "And the seven angels, which had the seven trumpets," so this picks us up back from verse 2. Again, verses 3 through 5 are more of a parenthesis. And so you almost could kind of leave those verses out and not miss anything. But we have verse 2, they're given the trumpets, and now they have the trumpets. And it says that they prepared themselves to sound. So again, these seven angels are the same seven angels that we met back in verse 2. And now they have those trumpets in their hands. And the picture is that they have them in the present tense. They are holding on to them because they've been given to them. And as it's put there in the text, there in verse 6, they prepared themselves to sound. Now, this is an interesting phrase that you don't really get a picture, a true picture of what we find in the Greek, in the English, because the word sound here is actually related to the word trumpet. The word sound in verse 6 is related to the word trumpet, but it's only in a verb form. And you can see those forms there on your lesson guide as well as up here. The verb form is salpizo or salpizo, and it means to sound a trumpet, or to trumpet, or to blow a trumpet. And so that's the picture here. To sound literally means to trumpet, okay? But then the noun form of trumpet is simply salpids, or salpigs, I should say. And so you can kind of even see the similarities in the first letters, even in the Greek that is before you. And so we have, really you could say and translate this verse a different way, in that they prepared, those angels prepared themselves to trumpet their trumpets. And that would probably be a better word picture of what we have here in verse 6. They were about to trumpet their trumpets. In fact, when we see this every time that we go through chapter 8 and chapter 9, and then also in chapter 11, when it says that the first angel began to sound, or the second angel begins to sound their trumpet, it's the same phrase, it's the same word. It is to trumpet their trumpet. And it is something that is introduced every time a trumpet is sounded. And the way this is put is that all seven angels got ready and stayed ready. So it wasn't, as we would often think, if you have seven angels with seven trumpets and they're going to blow their trumpets at different times, you'd think that one would get it ready to blow, and then the other one would get it ready to blow, and you'd kind of see the sequence of them doing that. But that's not the way it's put. They all get ready to blow their trumpet. And how does John know this? Well, perhaps, again, we're not exactly sure how he notices this. Perhaps all seven angels put their trumpets either near or right up to their mouth, so they're all just ready to blow when their turn happens, when their time comes, ready to blow their respective trumpets. That seems to show that in this vision of things to come, there's no more delay. No more delay to execute and finish God's plan for this world and for this age. So when we look at chapters 8 and chapters 9 and then in chapter 11, when we see all these seven trumpets, picture all of the angels having that trumpet ready to blow, right there at their mouth, ready to do what they're called to do. So keep that in mind as we go through these chapters. But then with this transition comes the question that is always asked in the study of Revelation. And we've looked at this question a few times already. And that is, where does this all fit in? Where do the trumpets all fit in to the book of Revelation? And of course, to answer that question, we need to go back again and review some of the ways that Revelation has been considered as a whole, but especially in chapters 6 through 16. Obviously, chapters 1 through 3 are pretty self-explanatory, because they deal with Jesus' messages to the church. Chapters 4 and 5 deal with the throne room vision, all right? But now we come to chapter 6, where the seals are starting to be opened, and it goes all the way to chapter 16, where we have the bowls finally poured out. So chapters 6 through 16, we have the seals and the trumpets and the bowls. And this is, you know, where a lot of focus, a lot of attention is placed in the book of Revelation, and so you kind of wonder where all of this fits in. Where do the seals fit in to God's plan for the ages? Where do the trumpets fit in to the last times? Where do the bowls fit in as well? And so really much of this lesson is going to be review, not getting into all the depth that we've looked at in the past. All of our lessons are available online, so if you wanted to go back and learn a little bit more about these different approaches, you can do that. But we're just going to kind of cover the surface, and hopefully it brings back to mind some of the things that we've already learned. But if you remember, there are three main ways to look at these three major sections. And again, the section is chapter 6 through 16 with the seals and the trumpets and the bowls. So the first way, which there's quite a few people that see it this way, and this is known as the sequential approach. And so these who hold this view, this approach, see everything in the seals and the trumpets and the bowls as strictly going through a sequential and chronological order. And so when you start at chapter 6 and you read through chapter 16, everything happens one right after the other. There's no flowing back. There's no recap. There's no interludes. There's no recapitulation. Everything happens in order. And so when they come to these storm theophanies, if you will, they would say that it actually happens three times before the coming of the Lord in the clouds. And so that's how they would look at this sequential approach. The diagram that there is there on your guide shows how they approach those seals, trumpets, and bowls happening one right after the other in a chronological way. Now, obviously, this is a very natural way for people to read anything, right? I mean, I think that's especially with our Western minds. When we come to any kind of history book or any kind of story, you know, we want to see things happen in a linear fashion. We want to see things happen in a chronological, sequential way. But we all know that there are a lot of stories that don't do that. In fact, even in some of the books that you might read, you know, there might be some progress in a chronological way, and then there might be more information that is added to give you another perspective about what you just read. And I think that's, you know, what we often see in the book of Revelation, though some would just see it as going one right all through the end. In fact, one challenge to that approach that we looked at already in the past is the presence of the great storm that really does accompany the presence of God that we find after the seventh seal, after the seventh trumpet, and after the seventh bowl. But those who hold this view see, again, if you look at the seals, you've got the trumpet, or you got seal number seven that comes before trumpet number seven, that comes before bowl number seven. And they would say that that storm theophany, the, you know, the lightnings, the thunders, the earthquake, and all that would happen three different times through that period of history, which they would say is mostly all future. So that is certainly one approach, and I think that is one of the major weaknesses to this approach, is seeing that everything happens in that chronological order. And so that has led some to look at this part of Revelation in what is known as a second approach, and that is the simultaneous approach. The simultaneous approach. And again, hopefully this is kind of bringing back to memory some of the things that we've looked at already. In this diagram, it shows how others see, instead of things occurring one right after the other, the seals and the trumpets and the bowls all happen simultaneously, or concurrently is another way you can put it. So one of the main reasons why some would hold this approach is because of the similarity of the seventh seals. All right, we talked about that storm theophany where you have the thunder and the lightnings and the sounds and the earthquake all accompanying the presence of God. And they would say, okay, since the seals end that way and the trumpets end that way and the bowls end that way, then they must be talking about the same thing. And I would certainly agree with that. But then they would back up and they would say, well, there's some similarities also to the first seal and the first trumpet and the first bowl, or even the second trumpet and the second seal and the second bowl. And so they would look at every single one of those as happening at the same time. And certainly that is one of those perspectives. In fact, there's a lot of interpreters that hold this perspective. A lot of ones that I've really enriched and learned a lot from. But I just don't see this particular approach holding true when you consider everything else. Again, they would look at the first four seals, the first four trumpets, and the first four bowls as affecting the world of nature. And there might be some little differences in the details, but they would still say that since they all deal with the world of nature in some manner or fashion, then they must be all talking about the same thing. They would look at the fifth and the sixth seal and trumpet and bowls as primarily focusing on the world of men. And so again, they would say that they would see those happening simultaneously. And then, of course, the seventh seal, seventh trumpet, seventh bowl, taking us to the second coming of Christ that is announced by that heavenly storm that will then bring about that great earthquake and that great hail. So, those who would consider this would say that since they all end at the same time, everything else must occur at the same time as well. However, some of them see that there are enough differences. They kind of see that this would be kind of a hard one to take. And so they would see the seals and the trumpets and bowls describing history, as one writer puts it, from different perspectives. So So the seals would be perhaps the perspective of men, what's going to happen during the end times. Perhaps the trumpets are from God's perspective. Obviously, we've got that golden censer with the trumpets being come down from heaven. And so they would see that heavenly perspective. And yet they would still say that all of the ones would happen simultaneously. All of the twos would happen simultaneously, all the way down to number seven, where they happen simultaneously. But they would also consider the interludes that we find in Revelation covering the same time frame. So just kind of an example of this. You know, we were wondering, well, where does chapter 7 fit in, right? Chapter 7 is what is described for us in chapter 7, verse 14, is the Great Tribulation. Well, those who hold the simultaneous view would see that chapter 7 encompasses the entire period between the first and second comings of Christ. And so they would see the 144,000 and the great multitude referring to the church of every age. So this would describe the church in the age, in the time of the apostles. This would describe the age of the church even today, and it would continue on until the coming of Christ. And so that's how they would see chapter 7. They would also consider this brief interlude that we looked at in verses 3 through 5, the synopsis, if you will, of the trumpet judgments. They would also include this as being part of the same period. And again, they're not saying this is yet future. They're saying this is happening now. And it's been this way ever since Jesus returned to heaven. There are a few other interludes or parentheses in Revelation that they would also include here. So we have another interlude in chapters 10 and 11. And they would say that also covers the church age, which is seal 1, trumpet 1, bowl 1, all the way to seal 7, trumpet 7, bowl 7. And then there's another interlude in chapters 12 through 14, and they would see it the same way. And so the interesting thing about the simultaneous approach is that they basically see that, you know, every time you come to a transition in Revelation, it's going all the way back to the beginning and giving us another perspective. So we had the perspective of the seals. Then chapter 7 came in and went all the way back and gave us another perspective. And now we have the judgments, the trumpet judgments. It's going to go all the way back to the beginning of the church age and tell us more about it. Then we'll have the bowls of wrath, and those are going to go all the way back to the beginning. And so every time you come to one of these transitions, you're going to see that difference or that similarity. But as I mentioned before, there still seems to be a clear difference in what is affected by the seals and the trumpets and the bowls. And so this is probably the main weakness of the simultaneous approach. Because if you remember in chapter 6, when we looked at all of the seals, and especially the first four seals, according to chapter 6, verse 8, they only affected a certain portion of the earth. And does anybody remember what that fraction was? 1/4. It only affected 1/4 part of the earth. And so when we see that in the seals, and then we come to the trumpet judgments, which we're going to consider, but over and over again, in chapter 8 and chapter 9, when the trumpets are finally sounded, they affect another third part of the world of nature. And so we already see that there's kind of a difference between the seals and the trumpets and the bowls. Because when we get to chapter 16 and those vials, those bowls are finally poured out, they actually affect everything and everyone. And I think this is a strong enough difference to show us that something more is going on than just what we find here in the simultaneous view. There seems to be a pretty clear intensification of the judgments from a quarter of the world to a third of the population or a third of nature, and then everyone and everything is going to be affected. And I think that with that order, you're going to see that there is clear enough difference to not necessarily hold to this particular view. Kind of makes the sequential approach hard to fully grasp. And so this has actually led to another way of looking at the seals and trumpets and bowls, and that is, does anybody remember what the approach is, the third approach? It's what people use to look at the eclipse, a telescopic approach, right? The diagram here shows how this approach combines the strength of the other approaches while addressing their weaknesses as well. And so if you look at that approach, you see that all the sevens are kind of ending at the same time, right? And really that's the focus of this entire book. Because after the storm theophany, after the voices and the thunders and the lightnings and the earthquake and the hail, who comes? Jesus comes. And that is the whole theme of the book of Revelation. We're introduced this all the way back in chapter 1, verse 7, where it says, "Behold, he cometh with the clouds." And so the biggest strength of this approach is that it keeps the focus of John from chapter 6 through 16 in constant view, which is the approach of the return of Christ. And that's highlighted in the seventh of each series. So at the end of the seals, at the end of the trumpets, at the end of the bowls, we have a manifestation of God's presence, which will take place before the return of Christ that we also see in the book of Revelation. And of course, it also allows for a sequential approach to the seals and the trumpets and the bowls up until that point. So we see that there is progress, there is history, there is something that is going to take place before the return of Christ. And those are mentioned to us in the seals and the trumpets and the bowls. Now, there is still a weakness to this approach, in that it doesn't always address the differences between the seals and the trumpets, because there are some significant differences between the seals and the trumpets, more so than probably those that hold the simultaneous approach would come to. But it also doesn't address the similarities between the trumpets and the bowls, because there are similarities between the trumpets and the bowls. But when you look at everything in the chapters in terms of unsealing and unrolling a scroll, and again, that is the context of these chapters in Revelation. In chapter 5, a scroll is given to the Lamb. The Lamb starts to open up that scroll by removing those seven seals. And then at some point, that scroll is going to be open and give us more information about what's going to happen. So I think this will all help us see that a scroll can help us connect these scenes, I think, in a better way. And so perhaps a better way of looking at the connection between the seals and the trumpets is what we can call the scroll approach. The scroll approach. And this can be seen on the diagram on the back of your page. So even though the seven seals of the scroll bring us to the time of the end, all right, and they certainly do, because of what we see and what we learn in chapter 6 and even here in chapter 8, it brings us to the time of the end in a way that is very, very close, very, very similar to what Jesus taught in his Olivet Discourse, especially if you remember from Matthew chapter 24. And there's also a passage in Mark, also a passage in Luke that I think you can, you know, bring that information in as well. And I would say that the seals are a review of what Jesus taught would take place in this world before his second coming. I mean, that's really what Matthew 24 is all about. Jesus is saying, this is what's going to happen. This is what you can expect before my return from heaven to be able to collect all my people and bring them with me and really set up the kingdom for my people. And so that's what we have in Matthew 24. And that's, I think, what we have here in the seven seals. And we looked at how similar every single one of those seals, as they are opened, is to Matthew chapter 24, especially that sixth seal. When that sixth seal is opened, you know, we have the earthquake there, but we also have the sun becomes dark like sackcloth. We have the moon like blood. The stars from heaven fall. That takes us to the very end. And that's what we have here at the sixth seal when it is actually broken open. So there's a lot of parallels between Matthew 24, what Jesus told his disciples would happen before he comes, and now the seven seals. The seven seals are a recap of the discourse. The seven seals are basically a review of the Olivet Discourse. But what happens when the scroll is finally opened? Well, in verse 1 of chapter 8, when we go back there, after the seventh seal is broken, and after the silence in heaven about space a half an hour, John is then given new revelation about the last days. So the opening of the seventh seal not only allows for the contents of the scroll to be revealed, it also introduces the trumpet judgments that must occur before the end. So that's kind of addresses some of the differences between the seven seals and the seven trumpets and the seven bowls. The difference is that one reviews everything that Jesus already taught, and now here's new revelation. Here's more information, John. John, you saw those seven angels with those seven trumpets, and you thought that that was going to be it. But that's not it. There's more yet to come before Jesus will come and return with the clouds. And so that opening of the scroll, the seventh seal, allows for the contents of the scroll to be revealed and also for the trumpet judgments to be introduced. And so the seven trumpets, which if you remember from last time, is summarized by the golden censer, verses 3 through 5. Again, we have the angel, this other angel, taking the coals from the altar, putting it in the fire pan, and then just throwing the whole thing to the earth. And we saw how the fire from heaven is then represented on earth in the trumpet judgments. Trumpet judgment number one, there's fire. Trumpet judgment number two, there's fire and burning. Trumpet judgment number three, there's burning from that fire. And so again, this golden censer is a summary of what is going to take place between what I would call the fifth and the sixth seals. And that's why we have that bracket kind of between there. This is information that has never really been revealed yet by Jesus or by God to any of his prophets until this particular time to John. And this will all lead up to the great day of the Lamb's wrath that comes in the wake of the sixth seal. You see, the sixth seal is really a major focus in the seals, because it's basically God saying, this is it. This is the final judgment. The final judgment is not the bowls of wrath. The final judgment is when Jesus comes on his white horse and destroys all who oppose him and all who are against him. That's when that final judgment and the wrath of the Lamb takes place. So while the first four seals describe the age of general tribulation, and I, again, would say that the first four seals really show us what's going on even today. And it's been this way in the church from the very beginning when Jesus went back to heaven. Obviously, it's not as bad as it's going to get, but I do think that there's a picture here of everything growing in intensity and frequency. If you remember in the Olivet Discourse, Jesus even said, things are not yet as bad as they're going to be. They will continue to get worse. You know, just like a woman who is in labor, that labor is going to increase in frequency and in intensity until the birth of the child. And that's what's taking place here. We have this increase in intensity and frequency, and it will go on until the time of Jesus' return. So the fifth seal, when that is opened, if you remember, it describes the same period of time in terms of God's people as the age of martyrs. So the age of the church, the age of general tribulation in this world, is the age of the martyrs. And this continues to go on now and has been, and will be until Jesus comes back. In fact, if you remember under the fifth seal, those martyrs are actually praying and crying out to God saying, how long, O Lord, holy and true? They're asking in terms of time. How long, O Lord, holy and true? And so the Lord answers in chapter 6, verse 10, that they should rest, or verse 11, that they should rest yet just a little season until their fellow servants also and their brethren that should be killed as they were should be fulfilled. And so I believe that that little season that Jesus is talking about is described for us in chapter 7 as the Great Tribulation, in which many, many more will join the martyrs of the church. And so, yes, there is some going back and reviewing of what's going to take place. But I think what we have here, starting in chapter 8, is the new revelation about what's going to happen in answer to the prayer of those martyrs and what is going to happen before Jesus comes. And that's why I have that everything happening in the trumpets between seal number 5 and seal number 6. It doesn't go all the way back to seal number 1. We're not repeating all of the things that Jesus said is going to happen, but rather this is new revelation, this is new information, so that God can prepare his people for the greatest tribulation that will come yet. And we don't know when this is going to take place. We don't know if the great tribulation is going to take place in our lifetime or in the lifetime of our children or our grandchildren or even our great-grandchildren. We're not sure of the time frame here. But the Lord says, I'm going to prepare my people by revealing this information to them so that when the time does come, they will be ready. They will be ready. And so all of this will lead to, or through, the sixth seal, which describes the end of the age that is still yet in our future when Jesus returns from heaven. So these seven trumpets correspond with a time period that is described in chapter 7. Chapter 7 tells the people, God's people, that are going through the great tribulation, what they're going to face in this world. The seven trumpets show us God's judgment and warning to unbelievers in this world. So there is a difference in perspective between chapter 7 and what's going to go on here with particular judgments. One focuses on God's people, and one focuses on unbelievers. And then, of course, this will all lead up to the same event that is portrayed to us under that sixth seal, which brings us right up to the final return of Christ and his wrath. I think this is the approach that makes the most sense, not only the content of Revelation, chapter 6 through 16, but also the design. I think it's, you know, we have to picture Revelation not just as a book, but as a picture book. There's a lot of symbols, there's a lot of signs, there's a lot of illustrations. And especially when we think about the illustration of the scroll, this is what kind of encapsulates it all for us. Especially when you think about this scroll with seven seals on it. And of course, once it finally opens up, we have that new revelation of the seven trumpets and the seven bowls. Now, before we, I do want to read through the trumpet judgments, the seven trumpets. But before we do, any questions about what we've reviewed as far as the different approaches and even perhaps the scroll approach, which is really the approach that I've been taking through Revelation and moving forward, is how we'll continue to look at it. Obviously, I don't have the bowls up here. We'll get to them when we get to them, all right? But this is so far the connection. And that was really the purpose, to look at the connection between the seals and the trumpets, and then we'll look at the trumpets and the bowls when we get to it there in chapter 15. So any questions or thoughts? Well, why don't we read about those seven trumpets, all right? And actually the six trumpets. So we have a little bit of time here. And let's just start off in verse 6. And we're going to read the rest of chapter 8 and then into chapter 9. And the seven angels, which had the seven trumpets, prepared themselves to sound. And this is what we're going to get into starting next Sunday. The first angel sounded. Remember, the first angel trumpets his trumpet. The first angel trumpets his trumpet, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth. And the third part of the trees was burnt up, and all green grass was burnt up. And the second angel sounded, and as it were, a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea. And the third part of the sea became blood. And the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died. And the third part of the ships were destroyed. And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning, as it were, a lamp. And it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. And the name of the star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became wormwood. And many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. And the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars, so that the third part of them was darkened. And the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. And I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels, which are yet to sound." Chapter 9. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. And to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months, and their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. And in those days shall men seek death, and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. And the shapes of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle. And on their heads were, as it were, crowns like gold. And their faces were as the faces of men. And they had hair as the hair of women. And their teeth were as the teeth of lions. And they had breastplates, as it were, breastplates of iron. And the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots of many horses running to battle. And they had tails like unto scorpions. And there were stings in their tails. And their power was to hurt men 5 months. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. One woe is past, and behold, there come two woes more hereafter. And the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God, saying to the sixth angel, which had the trumpet, loose the four angels, which are bound in the great river Euphrates. And the four angels were loosed, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year, for to slay the third part of men. And the number of the army of the horsemen were 200,000,000, and I heard the number of them. And thus I saw the horses in the vision, and them that sat on them having breastplates of fire and of jacinth and brimstone, and the heads of the horses were as the heads of lions, and out of their mouths issued fire and smoke and brimstone. By these three was the third part of men killed, by the fire, and by the smoke, and by the brimstone, which issued out of their mouths. For their power is in their mouth, and in their tails. For their tails were like unto serpents, and had heads, and with them they do hurt. And the rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues, yet repented not of the works of their hands, that they should not worship devils, and idols of gold, and silver, and brass, and stone, and of wood, which neither can see, nor hear, nor walk. Neither repented they of their murders, nor of their sorceries, nor of their fornication, nor of their thefts. In chapter 10, we have the beginning of a new interlude, and then chapter 11, part of that as well. And if you come to chapter 11, verse 14, where we have the seventh trumpet, Revelation 11, 14. So the interlude goes from chapter 10 all the way to chapter 11, verse 13, which we'll get to. Verse 14, the second woe is past, and behold, the third woe cometh quickly. And the seventh angel sounded or trumpeted, and there were great voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. And the 24 elders which sat before God on their seats fell upon their faces and worshiped God, saying, we give thee thanks, O Lord God Almighty, which art and wast and art to come, because thou hast taken to thee thy great power and hast reigned. And the nations were angry, and thy wrath is come, and the time of the dead, that they should be judged, and that thou shouldest give reward unto thy servants the prophets, and to the saints, and them that fear thy name, small and great, and shouldest destroy them which destroy the earth. And the temple of God was opened in heaven, and there was seen in his temple the ark of his testament, and there were lightnings, and voices, and thunderings, and an earthquake, and great hail. And those are the seven trumpets. And of course, as we look at those seven trumpets, a couple things to keep in mind. Keep in mind, first of all, that this is John's vision. This is Jesus revealing things yet to come in a vision. He's not seeing a movie picture of things that are going to take place in the future. Jesus is explaining to him and revealing to him things that are taking place in the future in the forms of symbols. And so a lot of these things, you know, there might be a literal component, but there's a lot of meaning behind those things that we read. In fact, every time you read the word as or like, you know, he's not seeing something equated with something else, especially when you look at the locusts. You know, it talks about their teeth were as iron. They weren't iron, but it was like iron. And there's a deeper significance and meaning behind what he sees that these locusts are like. And of course, keep that in mind as we go through. There's a lot of likes, a lot of as's that hopefully will, as we get a little bit closer, see that Jesus is revealing things that are embedded in the Bible to help John understand what God is going to do in his judgments coming up. So those are the seven trumpets. And we'll start looking at trumpet number one, even next Sunday.